Hey, y'all are listening to another episode of Big Facts No Cap with Paul and Adrian, the only show that's number one with scammers and gymmers looking for their pammers. Let's get into this episode.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts
No
Cap. Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
I was hanging out with some friends yesterday, and I was very excited when one of them mentioned BetterHelp, and I was like, hey, Big Facts No Cap 20 to get 20% off. And someone in the group was like, are you guys getting sponsors now?
I wish. Goddamn. BetterHelp, I'll stop saying mean shit about you if you sponsor us.
I told Nicole that I don't think we'd let them sponsor us, but honestly, who knows?
Of course I would. You know how quickly
we'll
I would sell out?
We'll take Raid Shadow Legends. Yeah, I guess so.
By the way, at IDF, at Israel, hit us up. Like, it really wouldn't take that much.
No.
We'll replace a certain segment where we donate to the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. We'll replace that in a second with a third segment where we talk
as
about how...
As soon as you slip us a piece of paper with a number written on it. In no denomination, so that's how we get scammed.
Next week's third segment is, what countries do use human shields? You won't believe who's at the top of that list.
Palestine.
I know this isn't usually how we do the show, but can I pitch you on a song for the episode?
Oh, to sing? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, one where kind of find the groove where we can fit it into any conversation that's going on throughout the episode.
I assume it's who's the guy? Who's the scam lord? TJ? Little TJ?
Oh, it has nothing to do with scamming.
Oh, what is it?
These are my people. This is where I come from.
And these are my people. This is where I come from.
I don't know why that entered my head over the weekend and I couldn't get it out.
I don't know that song.
You don't know that song? I had to look it up to figure out who sang it. And it was one of those things where I looked at the cover while I was on YouTube, and it's by Rodney Atkins. And I was like, why do I remember this random song? And it's like the cover looks so cheap. I was like, how would I remember this song from 2007, this country song? And then it went platinum. The cover just looks cheap, but it was incredibly popular. I'm sure I heard it on the radio or something.
Ooh, AstroTurfed. I can't recognize it, but...
We all know how I am tonally. You might be able to recognize it if I play the actual clip.
Got some discount knowledge at the junior college where we majored in beer and girls.
Might have to, because I think Marshall and I this weekend, our song was, and I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. Wait, why am I leaning into the mic to listen? Not even his biggest hit. Oh, that was on the radio?
Maybe I know it from somewhere else, but I think it was a hit when we were kids. That's like what
was
it
on Friday
like.
Night Lights?
Oh, is it in Friday Night Lights?
I don't know, but it doesn't sound familiar to me. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to veto that song unless I'm going to learn it.
let's take a 30-minute intermission real quick. You play it a few times.
Okay.
Let's get into the mood.
Okay.
Because
you know I don't do reviews off of one listen.
Fair enough. You don't do a Fantano first reactions?
Nah. I'll do that. I did go to a party this weekend where Joe was showing off. Well, before we got there, he was just showing off his massive alcohol collection. Like, the way that I described it to Charlie when we were, like, looking at it later that night, as we were like, we're, like, 40% of the way to so many different cocktails, but there's no one cocktail you can make from these things. And so when I saw a picture they sent in the group chat, I was like, you don't even have the basic ingredients for a Negroni. And Charlie thought I was being serious, so he brought the ingredients for a Negroni. And so that became a thing where I was making Negronis for people all night. And then once we were done making Negronis, I made him a Boulevardier, which is a twist on a Negroni where it's bourbon instead of gin.
That's a delightful story. I love it. But I also relate to Joe. Because I often find myself thinking like, oh, I just have all these liquors from like other times I've bought them to make drinks, but no actual coherent
like
cocktail
thing you can make
in my liquor bar tonight.
That's why he just asked us to bring mixers. That's why Charlie brought Mountain Dew. We were about to get a DUI that night.
Oh, come on now. That's funny.
Yeah, it's Phil's joke. But no,
I can
he
tell
also
because
didn't...
it was funny. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, come on now. It's this big empty house that I think he only recently moved into. So he didn't have like basic ingredients. So I was making the cocktails in batches in plastic cups, like stirring ice and then removing the ice to pour out the cocktails and stuff. But it all turned out fine. But yeah, I cannot begin to tell you that he has a basketball court. He has a pool. He has an entire range for his dogs. He has like a huge walk-in garage that's like bigger than my house that I live in.
Wait, who is this?
With a bunch of like my lab tech who lives out in the woods of Winters.
Are you about to become one of those guys who's like, why would you have a tiny apartment in the city when you can get a mansion out in Tennessee for the same price?
Well, but yeah, dude, the house is insane. But yeah, fun party overall. We made candles. I got some of my holiday gift giving finished by just making some candles.
That's really fun. I wish I had something mm-hmm, like yeah. that to entertain people dude, with.
Arathi was getting hella into it, dude. She left with an entire, like, aluminum tray full of candles that she had made by the end of the night.
Did Arathi have, like, a specific thing where she's like, this is, like, the scent I'm going for? Or was she just, like, you know, learning it for the first time?
She was learning it for the first time. We were limited. We only started introducing colors when Joe's wife got involved. But because fragrances are, like, if you do that into a mold, that mold's forever going to smell like that. We didn't experiment with that, but obviously that's like the direction you would want to go. I would love to get like a little peppermint thing. Oh, wait, I already sent you a picture. You didn't know what they look like. But yeah, wouldn't that rose be nicer if it had a little peppermint?
I don't remember getting this picture.
Okay, well, when you were blackout, I sent you a photo and you liked it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't really know what I was looking at.
It's a close-up picture of my beehole.
Okay, now I see. So, did you make all of those?
Yeah, I made those.
Oh. Well, the molds are beautiful. I don't know how much skill it took for you to pour the wax in.
You lube up the mold. It is hard to thread the wick into it. That part's hard. But other than that, yeah, it is. It's not that bad.
The wick on the rose looks really long. Are you going to cut that shorter or?
Yeah, I did that on purpose. That was just me being fun. That was me being a little wacky.
You're like, I am trying to encourage this comparison. I want people to say I got a long wick. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, come on now. Should we get to the theme? Oh, wait.
Unless you had a
I had one more media roundup. I'm almost done with the new season of Eric Andre, and,
Wait, really?
Huh?
You know he signed the pro Israel.
Did he really? Only half of him did.
You mean his Jewish half?
No, his black half. That's his real half. Come on now. No, I didn't know that. Oh, that is kind of sad. Never mind, I won't bring his show in. I was mostly just gonna talk about how it's kind of, yeah, it's like a Nathan For You later stages. It's like it's starting to lose a lot of its charm in that the interviews have to be so heavily edited because most of the people kind of know what's going on at this point, so it's lost a lot of that. But some of the like in the street stuff is still kind of funny. Oh, I was thinking while watching it that there was like, and maybe this is just the nature of New York City, but there's a weird amount of skew towards his pranks being on random working day people of color. And I don't know if there was a commentary there or if I'm not allowed to say that because he's black, but yeah, I said it.
Yeah.
I said what I said.
You said what you
said. I'd rather be famous instead.
By the way, Israel Lobby, if you guys want us to cut out all of this talk about Eric Andre... You know our Venmo.
If you want us to cut out this part where I'm talking about how apparently Deborah Messing and Megan Mullally are in a feud over their different political views, and one of the things that happened in September was Megan Mullally went to go see Sean Hayes' Broadway play with Susan Sarandon.
Wait, who's Megan Mullally?
She plays Karen in Will and Grace, and Nick Offerman's wife. She plays his wife and ex-wife in Parks and Rec.
I hope this doesn't affect the potential for a reboot of Will and Grace.
Well, that was the thing people were saying, is that part of what ended the reboot was that Megan Mullally didn't want to do it anymore.
Oh.
Yeah, she was too real for it.
Makes sense.
Couldn't keep it real with herself. Deborah Messing couldn't keep it real with herself.
Deborah Messing, goddamn.
Yeah, well, like Deborah Messy. And I'm not talking about the goat. You know, Grace, never one of my favorite characters on that show. So
Messy's the goat to you?
No, obviously the GOAT is Alfredo Di Stefano, but you know, a lot of modern kids don't want to talk about 1950s Real Madrid, so.
I was about to say, aren't you one of those people who has like basketball fans who like some white player from the 60s? And I'd like that you did go for that joke immediately.
Yeah. people never talk about Alfredo Di Stefano, the blonde arrow. The thing was, they didn't have goalies back then, so you had to really be able to get in the tight spaces if you wanted to score.
That was the era of soccer when nobody had checked their rule book yet and seen that you could have a guy in the box use his hands. They didn't know yet.
They couldn't read. That'd be fun. I should strike up a conversation with somebody one day and do that. Where like my Mount Rushmore of soccer: Lev Yashin, obviously Capello, obviously the blonde arrow himself. Those are my top three. Okay, now do you want to get in the theme?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Can you give me my change? If I give you this $100 bill, can you give me my change in 20s and then we'll just make it make sense?
Oh, okay. I pull out 20s and you start shuffling them around in some confusing way.
Yeah. I think I got taught that as a kid by the way, the theme is scams. I think one of my teachers taught that as like someone asked one day about like, when are we going to use this math in like fourth grade? And she was like, hey, if you end up being a cashier, you know, where you have to give out cash back all the time, which is a thing that happens when I was in fourth grade. She's like, people are going to try and pull this scam. And if you don't know how math works, you're going to get caught lacking.
A cashier at Moe's, she did get caught by that. Mm. She got while I was working.
I think you told this story.
Yeah, the guy tried to chase him down in the parking lot, our manager. And I was like, dude, what? You're going to citizens arrest him? What are you doing running out into the parking lot right now?
Yeah.
And obviously he didn't do anything. Our manager was incredibly unathletic, started panting halfway out the door. It was like, oh, couldn't catch him. Well, yeah, you were right about to, dude. You were hot on his heels. God, I hated Moe's so much. That manager was such an asshole.
Welcome to Moe's.
Yeah, she got got by that, and then she was crying, and then they were trying to get her to pay it back.
Oh, wait. Oh, that's sad. Yeah. I have stories about that, too. I'm getting diverged in the stories I want to tell now.
Well, let's go back to scamming. But she did get
scammed. Well, okay, hold on. Can I tell one story real quick?
Yeah.
It's sort of like a scam, but it's my favorite Moe's memory. The older kids in theater that I used to hang out with would sometimes go to Moe's, I think like every Wednesday or something, like every day of the week. Every certain day of the week, they would go to Moe's. And my friend Zach, who had a crush on a girl who was in his grade, I think they were a year or two older than us, concocted a scheme where he could tell, I think he got rejected by her at that point, so he was still trying to work the angle. And so one time, his cousin from out of town was visiting, and she decided to play along and act like his new girlfriend, his new boo, to try and make the other girl jealous. And I missed that one time of hanging out, but apparently she found out in the middle of the hangout, and I was like, oh, I wish I had been there. This sounds like the greatest thing ever. It sounds like Zach was literally like, how can I have Disney Channel my way into like making this girl like me? How can I Zach and Cody my way into getting this girl?
If it was Wednesday, specifically, I remember I hated the Wednesday crowd. Because Wednesday was the youth group, the church youth group days, and a bunch of people would come in after their youth groups.
Yeah, makes sense.
And oh my gosh, it was like people who didn't go out a lot, like their one time out with like their friends without a parents around sort of situation. Mm-hmm. So you'd get these groups of middle schoolers that were just like little menaces. Well, with their $10 their parents gave them to get a burrito after church. Horrible crowd. Wednesdays always sucked at Moe's.
I have another weirdly specific Moe's memory, but that one's a grocery story, so we're not going to tell that one. No, the other thing that I was going to say is, you invoked the memory of, I think there were one or two times that Trader Joe's failed the sled sends in someone with a fake, or not even with a fake ID, but someone who doesn't have a valid ID to buy alcohol. And I remember the one time it was this one girl, I can't remember her name, but she was a real stony chick that worked at Trader Joe's. I just remember seeing her with the guy and the manager in the back, and she was bawling her eyes out because she assumed she was going to get fired since she had failed that test.
Wait, they...
And that happened to us like twice.
They make the employee meet with the guy who got them? That's so mean.
Yeah, like he was in the back, like issuing the citation or whatever, and she was back there too, or whatever, to give her like explanation of what happened or whatever.
Oh, God. That's so horrible. Yeah. Like, how can you feel good about yourself and your job when you're a clearly overage person?
Yeah.
And you're watching a girl cry because she's worried about losing her job because, oh, my God.
I think the other time, the first time it happened, it was Jose, so it must have been a morning shift thing. Yeah, ACAB includes SLED, which I forget what it stands for, but that's the South Carolina Drug Enforcement.
Yeah. It also includes the 17-year-old kids that they got to go in and try to buy beer.
This is the reason why I brought it up recently with Phil, is that my ex-girlfriend tried to get that job because her best friend was her stepdad was a cop.
She tried to get that job? I didn't know you were dating a counter-revolutionary. Makes sense.
In high school, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was counter-revolutionary. That's why we broke up. I told her, baby, my heart's for the revolution. And I was like, if you break up with me, you're only breaking up with a man. You can't kill the idea of us being together. No, I'm just kidding. I broke up with her. Paul, when was the last time you got scammed?
When was the last time I got scammed? Oh, you know that classic scam? I got by the variation on the mixtape scam on Clemson's campus. A guy dressed
as
a Buddhist monk gave me...
What?
Yeah, it was a variation.
Well, because he was very Asian?
Oh, racism? That's what we're doing now?
No, that's a Childish Gambino bar. If you don't like that bar, I bet you liked it when Kid Cudi said it.
He, like, approached me, and I don't know why in my mind it kind of made sense that there'd be a monk on campus. I was like, oh, he's I don't know what I thought. It made sense.
A young co-ed is what Paul thought.
But he handed me some books on yoga and whatever, and then asked for a donation. And at that point, I'd already taken them, and I was like, I wonder, why is he doing this? Is this, like, some sort of, like, outreach?
It is funny that you can't just give it to them back and be like, oh, never mind then, I'm okay.
You definitely can. It's definitely, like, yeah, the awkwardness. Yeah. Because I guess I thought he was on campus as some sort of outreach program to, like, young Americans from, like, Tibet or something. So I was like, oh, this is kind of charming. I'll hear him out. And I was acting interested. And then he asked me for money for the books. He's like, oh, so are you going to pay for those? And I did. I handed over $5.
Damn. I mean, was it worth it?
No, they were really shitty books. They were very poorly printed little pamphlet books.
Oh, I see. No, I got hit with just the regular mixtape scam when I was in New York.
How old were you?
High school. It was high school. It was my high school graduation trip that I went to go visit my brother alone. And it was one of those trips where he still had to work during the day. So I would like go to a museum or something. I was walking out of the museum. Guy, very charming. He comes up talking to me. Yappy, yap, yap, talking my ear off. He's like, where you from, kid? Where you from in New York? And I was like, I'm from South Carolina. He's like, oh, I can tell you got that Southern swag going on. You want to buy my mixtape? It's got a little bit of everything. Classical, rapping, other music.
I like that he was like, classical. Like, he was like, yeah, we got a full orchestra for track two. And lyrics.
Yeah.
It's all instrumental. The brass section was incredible. We brought them all the way down from Quebec. They're an incredible band.
And yeah, it was exactly the same thing. He gave it to me and I was like, okay, cool. And he was like, you gonna pay for me for a little bit of that? I mean, come on.
It is weird how in the moment you feel pressured. Like, obviously in retrospect, you're like, that makes no sense. Why didn't I hand it back? Why did I feel pressured?
Yeah.
For me, I was worried he was going to use his Buddhist magic on me.
that makes sense.
I felt like I needed to buy it.
You and I both got anti-scammed by an Indian grocery store that sold us a blank mixtape that had bangers on it.
Oh, yeah. That was the opposite of a scam. We asked about it. I was like, why does it say there's a mixtape for sale on your wall? And they were like, because do you want? And
I remember that opening track being so hard. You got to find that. Is it still in your old Accord? Should we go find that car?
I actually do have my CD case. I'll check. I don't think I remember seeing it in there, but I'll check.
You gotta find. That's my version of like whatever lost song people are trying to find on the internet.
Yeah, that was funny. Also, great samosas. We were buying samosas and we were just standing around looking at the menu and we're like, does that say that there's music for sale too? And they're like, yes, you want.
I was like,
and we're like, oh yes,
I don't mind a little ditty.
It was only $1, too. It was like a burn CD. You know why it was good? Because it clearly gave off the energy of like, we press these or we burn these for like people from India who want to listen to like the music from back home in their car. Like we're kind of doing it more as like just like a cheap service for people who come in here to buy their groceries and they want to like get some.
Although again, familiar that music. First track was very modern.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's true.
I think that was also the thing where It might not have been that one, but that does happen at places like that where a grocery store sells their own food and they're like, do you want a samosa? And you're like, yeah, I'll take a samosa. And they're like, buy five. Don't buy one. And you're like, okay, sorry. Yeah, okay, I'll buy five. Yeah, like, it's not worth our time for you to buy one samosa. And I was like, okay, I'll take 20. Okay, other times that we got scammed. Okay, here's a story. And now my mom can hear it on the podcast where I only tell truths, because she did not believe me. I don't know why my mom thinks I'm a little stinker like this. Phil and I, our band was playing New Year's Eve at a party. I think my mom wanted to come because she was like, oh, we were going to go to the Peruvian restaurant in the suburbs of Charlotte, but we'd rather go to your concert if you're having one. And the venue got changed to a smaller venue because it flooded. And so I was like, oh, they actually sold out. They don't have any more tickets left. And she was like, they don't have any more tickets. Or do you just know that I don't know how to use the internet and can't find the tickets?
Also, it's so condescending to you. Yeah, sure. Your little band sold out. Sure, Adrian.
Yeah, that's she was really big leaguing me. So I was actually very determined to try and get her tickets. And so when someone put on Facebook they had tickets for sale, I messaged them through the actual account of the band that we had, which was embarrassing because it meant that Patrick and Phil could also see the messages where I was trying to haggle with someone who was clearly a scammer. Like, it took me a very quick to be like, once they told me that they wanted me to pay them on PayPal with the friends and family so they could get the money instantly, and I looked it up and I was like, scam alert, that's the one where you can't ask for a refund from PayPal if you get scammed or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, this is very obvious. So, oh, and then that is also annoying because then they start doing the thing where they start messaging you multiple times and being like, why don't you want to pay already? Let's go ahead and pay already. I have the ticket. Give me the ticket. Whatever. You'll give me the money. And I was like, okay. So yeah, that was an almost one. That wasn't an actually getting scammed, but that was a very common thing that Phil told me happens on their Facebook posts where they're saying that their show's selling out.
The other day, I ended up having I had to go do some things. I had to cancel plans with a friend. He actually had to do something too, so we both had to cancel plans to go see Shane Gillis. So he was going to sell our two tickets, and he went to do it through Reddit and had a guy lined up.
That's a good way to do it.
Had a guy lined up to buy them. The next day gets a text from the guy. He's like, actually, not going to, actually don't need the tickets. Ran into Shane last night. And he offered me free tickets and then sent a selfie of him and Shane Gillis.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. So,
damn, that's cool. Okay.
He ended up selling them to somebody else, so it wasn't like a I lost out situation, but I was like, that makes sense. I feel
cool
like
story.
You should be able to go to about, like, you just need to figure out what bar Shane Gillis is at, and you can probably buy him a drink for free tickets in whatever town you're in.
Was it the Irish bar in town over in Plaza Midwood?
I asked
Midwood?
Shane that, and he said he didn't ask the guy what bar it was.
Oh, come on.
I know. I want to know what bar celebrities go to. I already know the Lucas Bros go to the Blind
Pig.
Word.
Now that's a celebrity.
Were you not with me when I saw the Lucas Bros? I was with somebody else, I think.
No, yeah.
The Blind Pig. And they were dressed like...
The same?
Yeah, they were dressed the same, but in like red and blue, like alternative colors. I'm like, either they either came from a show or they want to be recognized.
Yeah, that's cool.
I love the idea that they just
where,
do that on
where
normal
is their
nights so people
right
recognize
now.
Them.
Yeah. Where is their career now? What are they doing?
Do they still have their animated show?
Yeah. Big hit. It's on. It's coming up on. It's creeping up on The Simpsons for most number of seasons.
Hey, leave
I think
the Lucas
they just
Bros
celebrated
alone.
Episode 500.
Leave the Lucas Bros alone!
Okay, other scams. I remember there were multiple times where when we were in the city of Guatemala, my cousin Jose, on multiple occasions, pulling me away from watching people play cards. Like, we'd be walking down the street and there'd be dudes playing con can, and I'd be like, oh, cool, I want to watch. And he would just take me by the shoulder and pull me away and be like, you don't want to get wrapped up in that sun.
You were like, but it looks so easy. I just saw a guy win $100 from them and all he had to do was watch the queen.
Well, I know how to play the game. I just wanted to see them play the game. And he was like, no, you don't do that. So I think that's mostly just avoiding scams. Like, we were able to mostly avoid scams in Cuba. We didn't, yeah. Oh, except for that one brewery that charged us way more than we thought they were going to for a beer tower.
Which wouldn't have been, like, nowadays for the amount of food we got, wouldn't be, like, a crazy amount. But, like, obviously for Cuba, in American dollars, it was a very crazy amount. Yeah. God, food restaurants are so expensive now.
Biden's America.
Everywhere is a scam.
Like it's the first day of school. I wanted to say I had at least one more thing. Online scams. I was telling you today that most of them come through text now. No one tries to call me really anymore. It's mostly people sending me a text. I get like 3 a day from a number, and I block every single one of them. So I don't know where these numbers are coming from. But yeah, it's like there are 5 apps on your computer that are breaking the security of your computer. Click this link to like figure out what's going on.
I don't know why I even thought this was like a good thing to buy. Definitely got a Kickstarter. I mean, they mailed me something, so it wasn't a complete scam, but it was for like a little Bluetooth controller for playing like phone games that like fit on your keychain. And I guess early in college, I was like, that's a great idea. I'll play all sorts of
games. I'll play so much Raid Shadow Legends.
And then it's like, obviously, it was just like this cheap piece of plastic bullshit that I paid like, oh my God, I should have paid 10. I think I paid like 100.
Oof.
Yeah.
Damn. Paul pay $100 for an unproven product off market, but he won't pay $100 to learn how to rap like the ERB guys.
You're going to have to explain that to the audience if you want to.
All right. I sent Paul a link because I saw on the latest ERB video, which was Karl Marx versus...
Adrian, it's bad pedagogy to only use acronyms.
Oh, sorry.
Which is your favorite quote from battles. The last like 5 episodes, but anyway.
Well, I was setting it up so that eventually I could say something about Straight Outta Compton, and Drew, I was like, who's that by? And Drew's like, NWA. And I was like, it's bad to use acronyms. What does that mean? Oh, yeah, Epic Rap Battles of History. I saw the comment they had where they were plugging all their stuff. And yeah, there's a full 6+ hour course where they teach you how to write rap battles like that.
Do you think they wanted a master class, but master class wouldn't pay them, so they had to make their own?
Yeah, they'll take George Bush and Hillary Clinton, but they're like, the Epic Rap Battle guys? No thank you. P.U. Stinky. Yeah, it's originally $198, but it's on sale right now for a holiday price of $99.
Why do so many generally talented people, I mean, this is discounting the politicians who do it, why do people who, like, legitimately have, like, their own careers and, like, quality contributions to culture do these, like, scammy, like, I'll teach you my skill set on MasterClass stuff? Like, it feels, I mean, I guess it's a big payday for them, that's why they do it, but it's like, don't you have, like, a little bit more respect for your audience and people who like you than making people pay for this overpriced service?
They could also delude themselves into thinking that they're actually doing a service to people.
You think so? You think they're like, yeah, this is good, I'm teaching people how to do whatever I do?
I mean, for Gordon Ramsay, it's no different than him just doing a Food Network thing. I don't know.
Exactly, but, like, he's obviously not teaching you anything more special than he's given away for free for years, and it seems like he's overpricing that service. I guess that's what makes it fine. The only people buying it are kind of like rich saps. Yeah. But still feels
either that.
What differentiates a scam from something you just think is unfairly priced? I don't know.
The one thing that I will say is MasterClass. Oh yeah, there was a really good day on YouTube where someone uploaded all of Gordon Ramsay's MasterClasses onto YouTube, and like, they knew they had like some amount of window of time before it got caught. And so I was able to watch all of them, and all of the comments were people being like, why am I paying so much money for this if it's on YouTube? And I was like, haha, suckers.
Oh, I love that some people are angry that somebody else could get it for free after they paid.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the college debt debate, but for MasterClass videos. Why'd I pay so much if these fangled kids are getting
I went into debt to learn how to make this cappellini.
I did the responsible thing and paid off my MasterClass in 500 installments of $1,000. And these kids are just getting it for free?
Yeah. All right. Do you want to go first or second for articles?
Your choice.
I'll go second because I have a long answer to mine.
I do too, actually.
Should edit in another harsh edit on the answers?
Yeah, I might do that.
Okay. Yours is more in theme. I kind of did the thing where I cheated out a little bit and decided to basically do lying as a scam. Sorry about that, folks.
All right, Adrian, I brought in The Cut. Personal finance. The Cut. So this isn't our much derided... What's her name from The Cut?
Ask Polly.
Ask Polly.
Heather Haverleski.
Right after she... This one jumps right in. They really don't prime you, so I'm not skipping a sentence here, but here we go.
Did you have anything about thought process for bringing this one in?
I think it's self-explanatory.
Okay.
Right after she retired a few years ago, my mom took a chunk of her savings, about 30K, and gave it to her cousin to invest through his small brokerage firm. The cousin proceeded to make a bunch of terrible decisions, like invest in GameStop and crypto.
Wait, what year was this? Oh, 2023. I was about to say, if this was like 2013, yeah. not bad investing.
No, this is, it seems like they lost the money. He also seems to have invested the money in a friend's business venture that went nowhere. Now most of my mom's money is gone. At first he convinced her that he could get it back, but now it's pretty clear that he won't. My mom was initially hopeful, but now she's pissed. I've done some research and it seems like this might have been fraud. Can she take legal action? I'm worried that hiring a lawyer might be too expensive, and she's already lost enough. She doesn't have a ton of financial literacy, so I want to help her out. What should I do?
What's the cutoff for, like, how close someone has to be to you that they can't do fraud to you? Or can anyone do fraud to you?
I think anyone can. There's, like, cases of people's parents. Like, they obviously, they have your SSN and all your information. Like, a lot of people's parents actually end up doing credit card fraud on their kids.
That makes sense. Oh, they take out cards in their kid's name or whatever and then max them out?
Yeah. Yeah, they just have so much info on their kids. If you have a shitty parent, it's just like a weirdly common and easy thing to do. Yeah.
If you had been a little earlier with the GameStop and the crypto. If you had been a little bit more on HODL Gang.
I honestly, in the last couple of weeks, I think crypto has really rocketed. He might have made this money back. Let me see what it's at right now.
Is that true? Why is it having a second rise?
This would be like its third rise. It had like a big rise in like 2013. That was the first time where I was like, it's dead forever after this one. 41K? Are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, he definitely made his money back. It went up 25K in the last year. It went up 16K in the last 6 months.
Hey, let's go. Smart investing.
It's up 20% in the last month alone.
Yeah, I have this issue where sometimes I'll talk about crypto with a friend of mine. And they're kind of a dumb friend. And so I really hate that they're oftentimes like, well, my dad invested in it in like 2019 and made like 10K off of it. So I can't be all bad. And I was like, oh my God, now you're just going to remain stupid about crypto forever.
Honestly, we should buy right now. It seems like it's really on its way up right now.
What are we getting? Ethereum? What's going on these days?
Oh yeah. Some of the smaller ones might be doing even better. I was looking at Bitcoin's price.
Invested in Bitcoin.
I did not realize it was doing that well. God damn. Honestly, this problem might have solved itself for these people in the last month. This was posted in November.
You're saying this is a...
It's now December.
This is a John Oliver situation. My dad bet all of his money on Germany. He's a gambling addict. Well, you're rich, son.
No, I'm sure he lost a lot of money on the GameStop thing. That's irrecoverable, no matter how well Bitcoin does.
Already...
He probably is doing the mistake where he's taking it out at its... he's really buying high, selling low. Like, he probably took it out of Bitcoin.
The GameStop thing already has a movie on it. Crazy how fast we move. That's when you know you should have taken your money out by then. Yeah, I don't think we have enough evidence that enough of it was in crypto to make that money back.
Family stuff, there's a reason people are like, don't invest with family. It's really up to you how much like you want to ruin his life over this.
Yeah.
But also, you might not have recourse, because like, how'd you give them the money? Did you give it as a gift? Because I think there's different legal expectations than if you gave it as like a contractual investment versus like a gift.
Yeah. I remember when I learned that I wasn't very good at, you know, I kind of follow the Shakespeare thing of neither a borrower nor a lender be as much as I can, because I know that when it comes to giving people money, it just makes me really anxious. I remember one time Dorley asked for some amount of money to like help get through a month that we were living together, and I was like, fine, no problem. And I think it was like 3 or 4 months later where I was like, I feel like you should be able to pay it back by now. And her partner at the time came to me and they're like, we need to tell you something. And I was like, what's up? And they were like, and I was high at the time, and they were both like, we're addicted to cocaine and that's why we can't pay you back the money. And I was like, that makes so much sense. And then they were like, no, we're just kidding, we just don't have the money. And I was like, oh, because for a minute I was like, there's no way. It was like $150. Like, it wasn't like $1,000. Like, how have you guys not been able to pay me back this yet? And like, Dorley told the story as if it was like a thing, like, can't believe Adrian believed that. And I was like, I was so convinced. I was like, I was high at the time, but I was also like, that makes so much sense.
Okay, I can't believe she thinks that would be surprising. Have you not Did they not know themselves? Like, what, they had little Matt over to do like,
yeah,
homemade
to make DMT
ketamine
in the
or whatever they yeah. used to do? And they think we'd be surprised that they were addicted to a little bit of coke? Mm-hmm.
I was like, that makes sense. You guys are always energetic. You never have any money. You're always closing deals.
Yeah, no, that's why I usually just give away money, I think, because it's better.
I
than
think that's
feeling.
The way you have to do it. Yeah, you have to be willing to part yeah. with that. Yeah.
I mean, if you like the person, if you don't like it, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
Charge them.
Yeah.
How much of a dirtbag is this cousin, is my other question. Like, is he embarrassed or is he yeah, just
could
like...
Could he also just be stupid? Could it just be stupid people hanging out with stupid people that are all in a big family together?
It kind of seems like that's it a little yeah. bit. Did she say anything about, like, does this affect her mom's retirement or is it, like, throwaway money to her?
That was a chunk of her savings, yeah.
Sounds like she can live without it. I mean, I guess if you don't like him... Look at your legal options, see if you can get some of it back legally through civil court. But I guess if you do really like him, it might just be like, that's the price you pay to not send somebody you love to jail. I guess those are your...
But I think
that's the calculation you have to make.
When it comes to like risk and like the law, how is what is stated here with no other details not legal? Unless there's a guarantee, but like she probably didn't get that in writing or something like that.
Well, I think it might be fraud if he spent the money of the, like the friend's business venture with them going to Dave and Buster's. Of the friend's business venture was them winning all the prizes at Dave and Buster's is how they were trying to recoup on the investment. I think that's considered fraudulent.
Mm.
I guess if they were all legitimate investment opportunities like GameStop and crypto. She might not have recourse unless there's some sort of law about you have to be like a financial professional to accept
yeah, right.
other people's personal money to invest.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. I guess, you know, I'm not a lawyer. Hire a lawyer. Also, I don't think Christian or Charlotte Cowles is a lawyer either. So she's probably going to only be able to tell you about the same thing.
All right. Do you want to hear what she has to say?
No, I think we can come up with some better ideas.
Oh, okay. If I know anything from capitalism, it's that you want more competition, so you should have split it up into 15,000 each for two of your cousins, and whoever raised the most money won.
Your mom sounds like a bit of a mark. Make sure that your cousin doesn't dress up as a lawyer and come to her being like, we have an opportunity to win back all your money in the court of law. All it'll cost is an easy 10K, and I can get you back 50 from this cousin. Now I might just be a simple country lawyer.
You think she wouldn't recognize him in costume and with an accent?
She kind of seems like a moron. At what point do you think she started being a little worried she wasn't going to get her money back? Around the crypto or around the GameStop or around the my buddy Eric has a great business plan?
I don't think she knows what any of those mean. I think she had faith the whole time.
Do you think he got a graph printed at Kinko's of like a line going up?
Ooh.
30K. I mean, I don't know how much money she has. Who gives away 30K?
Oh,
God
wait.
Damn.
So he can be sued because he has a small brokerage firm. So it is through a business thing.
Oh, I didn't even remember that part. Wow.
So this is what he does professionally?
If it's his firm, I assume that if these are legitimate investments, they're covered legally. Like, this is just the risk you take when you invest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I really missed that part of the question.
Honestly, I think my advice is that if you have that much money that you're willing to part with, just like play the lottery instead, or I don't know, do something more fun than just giving it to someone else to do something with.
Yeah, 30Ks and scratchies would have been a lot more fun than the headache this is yeah. to decide if you're going to try to sue your cousin.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we can jump into the answer.
All right.
Your poor mom. This is a shitty situation, but the good news is that what your cousin did is definitely illegal, and she does have recourse. I talked to several lawyers who specialize in fraudulent investments, and they laid out her next steps. Obviously, this does not constitute actual legal advice, but it will help your mom weigh her options. She's lucky to have you in her corner. First, help your mom collect every record of her communications with her cousin involving this money. This could include chat, text, email, account statements, transfer receipts, everything, says Janice Malecki, a securities fraud lawyer based in New York. All of this will be important for putting together a cohesive claim. Meanwhile, if your mom's cousin is or was registered with the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA, which you can do by searching his name on FINRA's website directory, in order to sell securities and make recommendations to investors One needs to be registered at a broker-dealer to FINRA, says Maliki. You should also see if he is registered as an investment advisor with the Securities and Exchanges Commission. Both the SEC and FINRA have rules and protections against inappropriate investments, like the one you described. A side note, running an investment advisor's name through FINRA and the SEC before you work with them is a good idea in general. I would strongly urge any investor to periodically look up their advisor and make sure that they don't have any red flags, says Maliki. That's not helpful to your mom at this point, of course, but good to know for the future.
Oh, for when she invests the other 30K that she has. She's like, all right, I'm going to make it up. He's another investor.
There's this FINRA wonderful brood. Man coming into town with snake oils and tonics, and I'll tell you what, they work magic.
There's a guy in town who wants to put a monorail through the town.
I thought those would cost more than 30K, but he says he can do it all. Mm-hmm. If the cousin is not registered with FINRA, then you've got a harder road ahead. The distinction may seem small, but it will affect which laws he broke and which regulatory authority is in charge of enforcing them, says Chase Carlson, a lawyer based in Florida who specializes in investment fraud litigation. Interesting. So if you want to do fraud, you're better off not getting registered.
I mean, she's giving out financial or legal advice and saying, I'm not accountable for what this advice is. So I don't know. It seems like, yeah, just be unregistered. Way to go.
FINRA has their own arbitration system where you can bring a complaint against a broker and try to get your money back. But if it falls outside of FINRA's authority, you will probably have to file a claim in court. Worst case scenario, this cousin wasn't registered or licensed to deal with investments at all. But even if that's the case, he still broke the law. Every state has laws against fraud, negligence, and misrepresentation in the sale of securities, said Carlson. There are federal laws against this as well. In other words, saying you're a qualified investment advisor or broker when you aren't in order to get other people to give you money is considered fraud as well. Holding him accountable for it, however, is a little more complicated.
I don't know if he ever said he was certified.
I feel like, yeah, you have to be to have the firm. Which makes me wonder, like, what is illegal about him making dumb investments? Like, yeah. He just took on too much risk?
Yeah. I think it's more about misrepresentation.
You're allowed to lose money as a brokerage firm.
Yeah.
I don't know. Next, it's time to get legal help. The good news is most attorneys in the area of law work on contingency, meaning they're only paid if they're successful, said Carlson. That way, the investor doesn't have to put more money into recovering what they've already lost. A lot of defrauded investors can't even afford to hire lawyers because they've had their savings wiped out, which could be your mom's position. That said, 30K, while a lot of money, would be small potatoes to many investment fraud lawyers, so they may not take the case. That's why you should also look into a securities law clinic at a local law school, says Maliki. These clinics are run by professional securities lawyers and law professors and offer free legal services to the public in order to give students who are not yet practicing attorneys the opportunity to gain experience working on actual cases. They often like to help investors with small claims and would probably help you draft a demand letter to send to the cousin's firm stating that they must return her money, says Maliki. If the letter goes nowhere, your next step would be to file a simple arbitration claim. Again, this would be most successful with the assistance of a lawyer or a legal clinic, and you would do it through FINRA or the court system, depending on the cousin's license or lack thereof. No matter what, you should file complaints about the cousin with both the SEC and FINRA. One may kick you over to the other one, says Maliki, but the important thing is alerting these authorities so that they and you can stop him from harming more people. The best possible outcome is that the cousin is registered with a broker dealer through FINRA, which would compel him to give the money back. Many brokerage firms have insurance for these kinds of cases, Maliki says, so even if he's lost all her cash, insurance would cover some or all of it. The worst possible outcome is that this cousin was simply a bad actor who scammed your mom into handing over her money and then gambled it away on dumb investments that he made personally. If that's the case, even if you win a lawsuit against him, you may not be able to collect the money that he lost because he simply doesn't have it. Either way, there are legal services and laws in place to help and protect people like your mom, and she should make full use of them. She isn't powerless in this situation, especially with your help.
If there's insurance for investments, why doesn't everybody just do that?
Infinite money scam?
Yeah. What's next? You can get insurance for going gambling in Las Vegas?
It does sound similar, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like somebody who does investments for a living would hear that and be like, these morons, they don't understand it. But I think we might just be right.
No, I think if someone who does investing was listening, he'd probably be like, huh, Las Vegas. Everyone there is fucking vegetarian now. Might as well call it Las Vegans.
Wait, what? I didn't know any of these stereotypes. Do investors not like Las Vegas? I thought they loved it.
Yeah, probably.
Does Las Vegas have a lot of vegans in it?
But you wouldn't nowadays.
It's like a joke made by somebody from an alternate reality. Are we doing a multiverse of Big Facts No Cap now?
Yeah, everyone is.
Okay, cool.
All right. Anything else about that one?
No, that's it.
All right. That was a lot of comprehensive advice. It seemed like they knew what they were talking about. Paul, you ready for my article?
Yeah, if I can grab a water.
Yeah.
And come back in a second. Re-up on my drink.
I'll just send it to you on the chat, so whenever you're ready. Okay. So I, like I said, I did mine more of like scam being like a feeling emotionally scammed due to a lie from your friend. And that's enough of a justification for this fun article. We brought her in once before. This is Ask Kai Advice for the Apocalypse. And hold on. This one also comes with a disclaimer. Kai Chang Tom is no longer a registered or practicing mental health professional. The opinions expressed in this column are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If that is what you're looking for, use Big Facts No Cap 20 for 20% off of a BetterHelp subscription. All content in this column, including but not limited to all text, graphics, videos, images. Oh, wait, never mind. I don't think that part matters. Okay. So, are you ready for this question, Paul?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, this is Ask Kai Advice for the Apocalypse. It's a column by Kai Chen Tom to help you survive and thrive in a challenging world. Have a question? Email askkai@extramagazine.com. Dear Kai, when is a lie unforgivable? I recently found out that one of my closest friends, a member of my chosen family, has been pretending to be poor all this time when secretly they're actually
super rich.
And honestly, as someone who has actually experienced real financial insecurity, it just disgusts me. My friend and I are both non-binary, and in our mid-30s, we met in undergrad and we hit it off right away as awkward queerdos amid the normies. They introduced me to feminism, queer politics, class politics, even the concept of being non-binary. They've always pushed me to be better and do better when it comes to living my values. And you know what else? They always describe themselves as working class, as hating bougie people, as someone who experiences material insecurity, all in quotes. They would talk about growing up worrying about money, being impacted by services that weren't sliding scale, and so on. I always believed them because I had no reason not to. Recently, they told me that they bought a house, a whole freaking million-dollar detached house in a major city. When I asked them how, they said their parents, quote-unquote, helped out a bit with the down payment, and when I asked how much, it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. When I asked how that was possible, they said their parents have, quote-unquote, always had some money in the background. Basically, it turns out that they have been really well off the whole time. I couldn't even look at them. They said they were afraid to tell people because they didn't want to be, quote-unquote, judged by the community and their access to generational wealth has been shaky because they're queer and their parents are homophobic. Not homophobic enough not to buy a freaking house for them, apparently. I'm not mad that my friend is rich. I'm mad that they lied and pretended to be someone they're not. And for what? Some irrelevant kind of activist cred? Why would someone do something like this? I don't know if I'm overreacting. I know that this lie doesn't really affect me in my life, and maybe I should just get over it. But I also don't know if I can forgive them. Bamboozled, flabbergasted, and furious.
This kind of reminds me of how you are, Adrian, because like, you never even lived in the trailer park. Like, you were living with your parents, you know, when they had, like, all sorts of dough. Like, when I was coming around, your parents were just, they were slanging the money around. It was, like, nothing to them. Your dad was lighting his cigars with hundreds.
That's true. I was, as we established in Dorley's episode, I was never in the trailer park, just in the one trailer by itself, in the servants' quarters.
The bougiest host of Big Facts, though, Cap.
Mm-hmm.
This friend sucks. That's... it's so weird to do that.
You don't understand it?
I guess this can be on pod. I was about to say leave it off. But that segment with Dorley does remind me. My siblings pull the exact same shit with me all the time, where they're always talking about the like living in the back of the gas station era. And they're like, you don't remember that. You were a kid when we lived at the back of the gas station. They're always talking about how hard it was. So I'm like, a little annoying of y'all.
Yeah, yeah. Damn, I didn't know that about them. Now they're way cooler in my eyes.
I know. It sucks.
They really got it out the mud.
But they do the exact same thing Dorley did about the...
Did your parents own a gas station?
My grandpa did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I didn't know this till recently, but, like, yeah, apparently they did actually all have to sleep in the same room when they lived there. I didn't realize that they all shared a single room back there.
Hmm.
Both my siblings and my parents. And I guess me when I was born.
So what, they just had a sleepover every night? Wow, so hard.
Anyway, back to this.
Back to this.
But it's very Dorley energy. Why do our families try to shame us for being around for the rich era?
yeah, for the rich eras. This reminds me a lot of grad students, because grad students don't make money, but a lot of students do like to pretend like they're in way harsher conditions than they actually are, which I don't want to say with too much
certainty, because there are probably some other students from...
Yeah, certainty and meanness or anything like that, because it does suck and we don't get enough and we should get more. I think more of them have safety nets than they like to admit.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. But in activist spaces, you gotta have every kind of cachet you can get.
Yeah, and that's when she got up from the wheelchair and you were like, you can walk too, and she's like, it's a miracle!
I saw a wheelchair on the side of the street the other day, knocked over. I was like, something happened there. Hope it was a miracle. Probably wasn't.
And that's when you walked up to her and you ran your finger across her dark skin and a layer of makeup came off and you're like, is anything true? What's that's real what, about oh God. You?
I'm just going to do more stand-up bits. You know, people always say men are the biggest liars. The biggest liars are women. High heels, you're not that tall. Makeup, you're not that pretty.
What other activist creds did she go for? Yeah. It's crazy what people will, like, do. I think this person is right for feeling annoyed. It is, like, really dishonest and really shitty. I guess my biggest gripe with this sort of attitude always came from, like, people I knew in college who had money and would do the, like, gotta eat ramen every night jokes, which isn't bad. I always kind of understood. I never really took it for, like, a very serious sort of, like, I have to... I never took it for, like, a serious statement of, like, the fact that they're destitute. It always felt more playful than, like, a legitimate claim to...
I mean, I think a lot of kids just liked eating ramen. Patrick spent a lot of freshman year. He had one bowl. It was a red plastic bowl from Target, and it could specifically fit two packs of ramen in it, and he would do a double bowl every night of ramen.
Do you think he loved it? Retconned it in his mind into thinking he was poor in college? Because
I don't
growing
think
so. Up Maybe, in the South, I did meet a lot of people who were in their 50s and would talk about how they were poor in college. I would go, I don't know if they would always bring up having to eat mac and cheese or ramen. I would go, I don't know how true this is. I don't think you were as poor as you're claiming. Yeah. I obviously can't prove anything, but it just doesn't feel like it's as true for everybody who's claiming it.
At least in the honors dorm, which we lived in, which were super nice, the main thing is that we only had a mini fridge and nothing to really cook with. So, like, that was the limiting factor. Not that we couldn't, like... You know, Phil used to make fun of my lunches that I would make, because I'd make little, like, crackers with delis, cheeses, and sandwiches and stuff or whatever, and he'd be like, oh, what is that, like, for your American Idol viewing party? And it's like, hey, I can't really cook in here. That's kind of what I got if I'm going to be culinarily creative.
Yeah, no, I get you. I get you.
It wasn't a destitution thing.
I do feel like way too high a percentage of, like, upper middle class people's parents were poor growing up. For it to be true. I'm like, mm-hmm. How many people escaped there? How many upper middle class people had to escape poverty to reach upper middle class? Because it seems like nobody ever claims to have just grown up upper middle class and then stayed upper middle class. Nobody has that life story.
Yeah. But yeah, so what do you think about this in terms of your activist friends or anything like that? Do you think any of them are hiding dark secrets? Or do you think they're mostly open? Oh, do you think they're like that guy who you thought he was way cooler than I thought he was, where I was like, this guy really likes talking about how privileged he is as a tall white guy? Is that what the attitude that they should adopt is?
I don't know anybody in, like, DSA who talks about how poor they are. I haven't met anybody who really, like, sells themselves as, like... I know people who sell themselves as, like... I shouldn't even say sell themselves, because they, like, they do work service industry.
Well, they have personal brands.
I don't, they never, like, let on how much money their parents have. I have no idea if they come from money or not, but I don't know. Nobody's actually annoying about this in that sort of way. Nobody ever calls or claims.
This feels like, more like New York City type, everyone doesn't know each other's background type thing. In YOLO DSA, the big thing that you can get for, not cachet, but, like, general respect is, like, knowledge of local politics. Like, being able to be like, oh, yeah, I remember Cynthia's campaign from 2017. And, like, immediately people are like, oh, that guy knows his shit. That guy was around for the real shit. Yeah, I feel like that's, and that might just be me, but that's my biggest thing, is like the biggest source of like credibility is like, oh, that person knows about that person's campaign from 8 years ago or whatever. And they're like, yeah, I was knocking on doors for that campaign, which I don't know. I think that's an okay metric.
Well, that's a lot harder to fake than just being like, oh, yeah, I come from poverty.
I mean, when it's real, you can see it in their eyes.
What's that one brand that's like it's not like a Nike swoosh, but it looks like a U on the shoe. It's like an Amazon brand that you see people wear sometimes.
I have no idea.
Oh, you walk up to this friend's shoes and you rip off the fourth bar on the K-Swiss and it's just a pair of Adidas and you're like, I fucking knew it. Yeah, I forgot the original question. What were you asking?
I think I asked about activist circles, but also just there's a lot of questions within this question. Hold on. I'm mad that they lied and pretended to be something they're not. And for what? Irrelevant activist
crap. Are you angry about this? Because I would be angry about this. I'd feel annoyed and betrayed.
Oh, it seems super annoying. I think annoying more than betrayed. Well,
they weren't even just subtly hinting at it, though. It seemed like they were explicitly lying. They actively talked about it.
Yeah.
Which is
definitely
different than just being a little bit like,
than obfuscating?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of those things where, like, the one for me where, you, like, you know, like, the real, like, say less fam type situation is when anyone talks about growing up with a horse or doing horse things.
Oh, well, like, what if they grew up in such poverty that they had to have a horse, like they were a farm family?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing about towns is, like, they're always, back in the day, they'd be like, I want to get out of this one horse having town. Now, if a place has one horse, that's a big city. You want to stay there. That's a big giveaway for me, is if two people have way too much to talk about doing horse stuff together, I'm like, okay, these people both came from money. Do you have any giveaways like that? That, and if they call their mommy and daddy.
If they're too good at a certain type of bar game early in college, because that means they had one in their house. If they're really good at pool or ping pong.
Oh, the old Ben Schaefer, yeah.
Yeah. That means they had a finished basement, you know what I'm saying?
Damn, that's true. If they're swimming laps around you in the pool, it's because they had one as a kid.
Yeah. Although I guess that very quickly disappears once people start going to bars and just getting good at that stuff from hanging out.
Yeah. I remember I had one friend who, it's the most bizarre thing thinking back to it, when we were all younger and healthier in undergrad, but 100% refused to walk to class. She would only ever take the shuttle or a taxi to class.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
That's insane behavior. USC is not that big. USC is a very walkable campus.
There are certain parts where it's hard to make it in 20 minutes, and that's why I rode my bike. But I wasn't like, I'm only taking the shuttle to class. And I think it was another thing. I don't know why it was this one person in transportation. But I remember us talking about both visiting New York at some point. She was like, yeah, my family just takes taxis the whole time. And I was like, you don't take the subway at all? She was like, the subway? Where poor people eat? And eat fresh? Where you guys get your vegetables from?
The last part of this where they say, well, they didn't feel like they had the access to the generational wealth because their parents are homophobic and they're queer.
Yeah, and it's like, how are they homophobic? They're bitch gay.
No, exactly. It feels like one of those things where it's like, now that you know what type of, like, kind of subtle liar your friend is about these things, it is kind of like a tip off that, like, her dad and mom are probably, like, homophobic, but probably in a much more casual way than, like, it's making me feel like it's more one of those situations where they're not saying, we hate you for being gay, but, like, a much more, like, subtle microaggression way of being problematic, which is hurtful and bad, and I do feel for people who have that sort of familial dynamic, but it is different than a straight-up, like, telling you to your face you're going to hell and being really, like...
No, they literally bought her a house.
Yeah. They basically are still supporting and loving her, even if maybe they are problematic. There's levels to this homophobia thing. Yeah, I've had multiple friends who just got cars, like, after college. I'm like, you're too old to just get cars.
Cars cost money. You can't just get those for free.
You can't just get a brand new SUV that was driven for 1 year by your mom. Which is then she decided she wanted a different SUV.
Yeah.
It's not how you get a car.
You have to save up for a Honda Accord, which everybody wants.
You go to a dealership and talk to the most annoying man of all time for an hour. That's how you buy a car.
I am glad that I've never bought a dealership car before.
It's a really shitty experience. You feel like you're getting scammed the whole time talking about scams.
Hey, talking about scams, yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot that this was supposed to be scams.
Going to a dealership, it's like it's a legitimate business, but your whole body is screaming, he's trying to fuck me, he's trying to scam me. It feels like you're in a nest of vipers.
You know, the thing for me, though, is I don't know how much that industry has evolved. Because, like, if I went today, my one thing would be, like, I'm not paying the sticker price. And it's like, yeah. People have known for like 50 years now that if you're paying the sticker price, you're a sucker. But like, I don't know what their next line of defense is. Where they're just like, hey, buddy, what do I have to do to get you in this car today? And I'm like, shit, I don't know what the next part of this is. What do I do? How do I counter?
You're like, do a silly dance. You brought your airsoft gun, you're shooting at his feet.
They're like... I'm like, what if I trade in my vehicle? And they're like, it's going to cost money for us to handle getting rid of that for you.
That'll add $500 to the sticker price.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine? I don't know why. In my head, I just thought, like, if I ever go, I know it's going to be some really charismatic dude, like the dude who sold me the mixtape, who's going to be like, okay, I know you don't want to undo the sticker price. But what if I told you there was another sticker underneath? And he pulls out another sticker. That's only like $100 less.
No, it's like the mixtape guy where he lets you do he lets you drive it, you know, he lets you do a test drive and he's like, you get out of the test drive, he's like, so you're gonna pay for it now? He's like, what? I thought I was just testing. He's like, oh, you said you were just gonna test the car. What, you think you're gonna go fuck my wife? You think you're gonna go fuck my daughter and not marry her?
Hey,
no.
Here's my hotel key. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
So you're just gonna take it for a little joyride and not pay for that shit.
It is funny though, because that's the thing that's been a thing forever, right? Like, I know that the whole, you know, it's cool to be I don't know, a person of color or queer or whatever it is that conservatives like to complain about. But I think being rich has always kind of been like a embarrassing thing to admit, right?
No, because then there's also people who love, like, right? There's the whole like buying expensive brands thing where people want to show off their wealth. But I feel like even nowadays, there's still people who... I feel like we're thinking of our mindset and people we know. There's definitely people who take pride in, like, being wealthy and always dressing in the nicest clothes and...
being little Nepo babies.
Yeah, there's definitely people who like that sort of stuff.
All right.
I mean, there's hustle culture. There's grind and hustle culture, people, for God's sakes. They're
but
so
those
proud.
Are getting out the mud.
Oh, you're... Okay, I see what you're saying. It is embarrassing to be from money. It's not embarrassing to have money.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I guess it has always been embarrassing to be from money.
That's why Jason Schwartzman changed his name. That's why Nick Cage changed his name.
Yeah, so they don't look like Nepo babies.
That's why Mitski changed her name. That's why Lana Del Rey changed her name.
No, Lana Del Rey changed her name to make it more Hispanic. The rest were true, though. I did have one last point.
I mean, my advice is for the person who lied is like, hey, if you're worried about being judged and people getting zingers on you, that's going to happen. Accept it.
Also, what are you going to do now with your big house? Like, are you just going to pivot to not lying to people anymore? Was this just...
No, you just say that you bought it with your COVID stimulus check.
That is true. That is a get-out-of-jail-free card right there.
Oh, you know, speaking of which, where this is kind of in that same vein, do you have any friends where you're like, oh, yeah, that guy's really rich. He got hit by a car. And got like $30,000 out of the settlement. Do you have any of those guys?
Well, I have a friend's parents. Yeah, yeah.
My sister had friends growing up. She was in IB with her, so I don't know if they were friends or whatever. But literally the reason that they had their house and the reason it was as nice as it was is that the younger daughter in the family ate raw cookie dough from like Nestle Toll House and got salmonella. And they got like a $3 million lawsuit out of it. And like literally their parents were just like, yeah, that's how we got this house.
I like that they were just like, it's our house. Shouldn't it be the daughter's?
Nah.
Who gets that?
She's better now. If you had given her the $3 million, you know what she would have bought? A bunch of pixie sticks. Can't make a house out of that.
That sounds cool. That sounds like a Mr. Beast video, pool of pixie stick dust.
And then she would have made that money back. She could have been a real visionary. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that I knew like that. I mean, there was me who got my money and spent it all. I was one of the, I think when I was on the verge of finally getting my settlement from being hit by that guy, I heard a story about my old manager at Trader Joe's who used to work at the Riverbank Zoo. And at one point, a gorilla got out of the Riverbank Zoo enclosure and broke like the femur of some dude who was like working there, who was trying to capture the gorilla and get him back in the enclosure. And he was like, yeah, guy got like 20K in the settlement, just spent it all on drugs. And that's when I got my settlement, which was less than that. But I was like, yeah, pretty easy to spend all that on alcohol and drugs. It's not that hard to spend like that especially much money after. All right. Anything else about wealth?
Ooh, blackmail your friend. Tell them you'll tell people if they don't pay you monthly.
Wasn't that like a big part of the discourse around hipster culture like 15 years ago?
Yeah.
I'm bringing this up because Joe kept calling us hipsters because we were playing hacky sack at his house because there's so much room to play hacky sack. And first of all, I was like, one, these are your hacky sacks. I didn't bring these. These are from your house. But two, who even like this is such a Joe thing to call someone a hipster in 2023. But three, that was a big part of that discourse is like part of the like hipsters in New York and Brooklyn are so dumb wearing flannels trying to look like a lumberjack, even though they're making 60K at their whatever job or whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely still a thing because you know that meme of the like people dancing and there's one person in the corner. I think I've definitely seen that with like a party of, I guess, people, you know, like it'll be I don't remember how they got across the idea that everybody there was a Brooklyn hipster. Whatever they did, and then it's just a like beanie them in the corner. They were all wearing beanies, and then it's each one of them has a thought bubble, and it's going, they don't know that I'm rich. And it's every person at the party thinking that while they're wearing beanies and have other hipster signifiers on. Except I think this was like a modern thing. Culture really is cyclical. People, I mean, maybe people don't use the word hipster as much, but like there's a very clear archetype that is now the thing people complain about. Like,
yeah.
I guess it's just Brooklyn podcaster now. Bernie, bro.
Who? Oh, come on now. This podcast is now officially against. Finally.
Yeah. Shut up, old man. Call for a ceasefire.
Yeah. Not a humanitarian pause. How about you humanitarian pause my nuts in your face? Come on now.
Get your humanitarian paws off of these nuts. I'm saving them for somebody special who call for a ceasefire, Bernie.
Come on now. We're Norm Finkelstein guys now.
You know he's transphobic, right?
Huh? How about he transphobes these nuts? All right, we're Jeremy Corbyn guys now.
We're Jez guys.
We're Jezzes. All right. This is a long answer. Let's get through it. Feel free to interject if you see anything, because it might be hard to remember everything. You
know, I do feel bad for this person, though, because it's like they've been in this queer BIPOC community where it's like this activist community. They always were like, they always thought it was like, these are my people. This is where I come from.
Also, the detail about how like they were the one who taught them what non-binary was. Can you imagine them being like, non-binary? What's that $5 word? And they're like, nope, can't afford that. Don't know what you're talking about. Nope. Don't have the money for that. Don't know where I learned it. Okay, you have every right to be angry. We rely on the words of our close friends and chosen family to let us know that we're safe with them and understood by them. That they have our backs in an unpredictable world. Queer folks particularly depend on our friends to help us grow and survive. When such a significant deception is suddenly revealed in an important relationship, it feels like walking up a familiar staircase only to have one of the steps give way. It makes you wonder how safe that staircase ever was in the first place. It makes you wonder what other parts of the house might be broken. What I find most interesting about lies isn't what they hide, but rather what they reveal. Once spotted, a lie can often tell you something important about the liar, what they care about, what they fear, how they want to be perceived, and how they wish to see themselves. In Tennessee Williams' A Streetcar Named Desire, iconic pathological liar Blanche DuBois spins a web of falsehoods about her age, her financial straits, her relationship history, and her intentions, all in the hopes of clinging to her fading glory days as a formerly wealthy Southern belle. Caught in her lies by a man she hoped to seduce into marriage, Blanche cries out, "Never inside, I never lied in my heart." I think about Blanche a lot when I think about peculiar phenomenon of people in queer and trans communities, and perhaps more broadly in social justice-oriented communities, pretending to be more socioeconomically disadvantaged than they really are. This sort of thing ran rampant among a certain crowd of mostly, but not entirely, white, middle, and upper-class queer and trans folks when I was in university, and I still encounter it fairly frequently today. I suspect, BFF, that the people who do this are, ironically, trying to express a certain truth about themselves through the deception, that is to say, their deep desire to belong to something bigger and perhaps better than themselves. Like Blanche DuBois, their mistruths are a reflection of how they'd like to be seen in order to best get their needs for connection and esteem met. Where Blanche pretends to be wealthy and glamorous, folks like your friend pretend to be poor and abject. I suspect that a goal of the lie, however, is similar. Like Blanche, I imagine that your friend was presenting a story that they felt made them most lovable to themselves as well as others at the time. Queer and social justice culture have done a good job teaching us to empathize with the oppressed and the underdogs. Perhaps they have not done as well at teaching us how to simultaneously acknowledge and be more critical of the aspects of ourselves that are privileged by the dominant culture. Perhaps rather than face the fact that we can be both oppressed and complicit in oppression at the same time, some people feel they need to choose a simpler story where they are always an underdog hero and never a villain. Perhaps reading the above has made you feel softer towards your friend, BFF, or perhaps it has only enraged you more. Either reaction would be understandable. On one hand, looking more deeply into a liar's motivations often awakens our compassion. On the other, unresolved emotional needs are not an excuse to appropriate other people's experiences and pull them into our own psychodrama. When it comes to forgiveness, I think the first step is to assess your friend's ability and willingness to have the hard conversation and fully acknowledge the reality that they are living in, one where they are benefiting from unearned financial privilege and where they lied, or at least were not fully honest and misled by omission about it to you. How much are they able to own up to their actions and their privileges? Are they able to hear and understand the impact on you? Can they learn from this experience? And if so, does that help you feel more trust in the relationship? I might also encourage you, BFF, to consider if there have been moments in your life where you failed to represent yourself with the full truth, or where you compromised authenticity for the sake of belonging. This isn't to say that you've done anything just as bad as your friend, but rather a reminder that sometimes connecting to our own flaws can be helpful in making room for the mistakes of others. What your friend did hurt you, yes. But as you've mentioned, there are also many times that they gave you important gifts, insight to who you are and what kind of person you want to be. It may be important to acknowledge those gifts as real and important, regardless of everything else that has happened. If, having explored all these angles, you still can't find it in yourself to forgive, then it might be time to consider the possibility that this friendship has run its course, at least for now. Forgiveness is a choice, not a moral requirement, which means that we are allowed to choose not to. Some relationships can't be repaired, and that doesn't mean you failed, BFF. It just means that it's time to let go and to grieve the connection you had. I'm sorry your friend lied to you, BFF. You deserved the truth. In moments where trust is broken in our closest relationships, it's more important than ever to trust ourselves. Listen to your own heart. It will tell you what you need. All right. Anything else? Or do you want to go straight into third seggy?
Yeah, let's go into the third segment.
All right. What you got for me, Paul?
Yeah, so we're going to the biggest crowdfunding scams of all time. Do you have any famous ones you remember? For me, I always think about Star Citizen, that video game, just because, I mean, the people who invested in it are still being continuously scammed and are so mind-bogglingly stupid about it.
Really?
And then,
what's so cool about the video game?
Well, it hasn't been released yet, but the thing is that they continue to release like ships to people who are like early investors. Are like, oh, when you do play the game, you'll have this, oh, we just released a new type of ship you can buy early, and people will pay like $10,000 for a ship that they'll have when the game is released. And they've been doing this since like 2012. This has been that like a decade insane. Of them selling a virtual ship that you'll eventually get to have in the game, and people will still buy it.
I have no idea. This sounds like a, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find a YouTube essay about it. And then there's the other one. Do you remember this one, Captain Disillusion did a great video on. There was one that was like an armband that what it claimed was the armband would project like a phone screen onto your wrist, and then you'd be able to like tap on your phone on your wrist and it would detect where you're tapping and it would work like a phone.
That's kind of cool.
And he was just like, just did a whole video on like, no, like, there's no projector that's that small. That would, like, it just, it wouldn't work.
And?
And yes, I think it was a scam. They didn't deliver. I don't remember the name of that one, though. But yeah, do you have any big ones you remember? I know there was whole podcasts that do just this concept, where they do deep dives into these Kickstarter scams.
Oh, you sprung this on me last minute, so I can't say that I had the chance to prepare. And this also maybe is just isn't my niche of the internet, because I never... I think the only GoFundMe that I've ever given money to was like a medical thing. I don't think I've ever given money or heard of stories about a game. For me, I don't really know enough about these things.
Okay, so I have a article open on failery.com's blog, Kickstarter Fails. All right, first up, we got the Pebble Time. It was a water-resistant smartwatch that featured up to 7 days of battery life and a built-in microphone for voice replies to messages from 2016. Had an e-paper display that mimicked the appearance of ink on paper. Yeah, people know what e-paper displays are. Jesus Christ. It raised $20 million. God.
Just for a watch with a long battery life?
Oh, basically they actually delivered on everything. But what made it a scam was they ended up selling to Fitbit and then just stopped supporting the watch and replacing parts or doing any software updates. So they just kind of let it die.
Oh. Damn.
Yeah, it's almost not even like a purposeful scam. It was like Fitbit was like, well, let's just buy out the competitor and destroy their company and ruin this for everybody who bought one. I guess this just proves what we all already knew. Capitalism was the biggest scam all along.
Ooh, okay. No cap.
coolest cooler.
Okay, coolest I'm gonna go cooler. Ahead and say, design-wise, this one looks like a fucking kid's toy.
It looks so stupid. Do you want to describe it? Actually, do you want to swap who reads each one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Coolest cooler. What the coolest cooler was, the coolest cooler Kickstarter campaign was launched to fund an all-in-one party cooler that not only kept your beverages cold, but could also open beers, crush ice, and blend drinks. As if those weren't enough features, the coolest cooler also had built-in Bluetooth speaker, a USB charger, a cutting board, and storage for plates and cutlery. Year 2014, raised $13 million.
And if you guys are wondering, it looks like the dumbest Margaritaville bullshit ever. It's just like this really ugly plastic cooler with a blender sticking out of one side.
Well, it looks like the toy kitchen that a kid would have.
It kind of does, yeah.
Why it failed. The coolest cooler Kickstarter campaign failed because of poor financial planning on the part of its founders. For all the features the cooler contained, the price tag of just $185 for the regular package was too low. In the end, none of the project's backers got their coolers, but the company succeeded by selling the coolest cooler on Amazon for a higher price. So they just fucked over all the backers?
Yeah, I know. That's so funny.
Wait, and we can still get the coolest cooler?
Yeah, I'm checking this out. How do I find it?
How much are we paying on Amazon?
I'm not finding it on Amazon. Maybe they renamed it. Maybe I need to do cooler with blender or something. Can't believe 62,000 people are waiting for their shitty cooler with a blender in it.
The orange color people is the are such suckers. Thing. It's so ugly.
I know, man, right? Oh. It's when it's on sale to the public again. So it was on sale at one point. Oh, yeah, I remember this one, the Ouya console.
Was this Soldier Boy?
No, but kind of similar. It's like an Android console that they invented. So the description provided by the website, Ouya console as a new kind of video game console. It's going to be an affordable console built on Android that would allow anyone to develop games for it through open source coding. While the product did launch and get shipped, it was another one of Kickstarter's biggest failures. 2012 for $8.5 million.
So a cooler got like what multiple times this amount of money?
The cooler got $13 million. That's cool. and they couldn't develop the cooler. At least the Ouya got made, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Okay, so what's going on with this thing?
From what I remember, the controller sucked. It was like a very weak Android. It was like a $100 Android phone, just repackaged as a cube with a like shitty Amazon controller with a what do they call Wildcat controllers? Remember that brand as kid? Yeah, it was like something like that, like some just cruddy controller packaged with like an outdated phone in a box. People just didn't like it. Basically, I think this was a case of honestly like. they didn't mispromise anything. People just misunderstood how much they wanted a shitty Android game box. I think people thought they wanted it, and then it turned out they didn't.
All right, are you for this next one?
Yeah.
Paul, have you heard about Scarp?
No, but this feels like it should have done well on Shark Tank, not on Kickstarter.
Scarp was a laser shaving razor that would allegedly melt both light and dark hairs using a specific laser frequency carried by a piece of string. In other words, the razor was to use a laser. It was a laser razor instead of a regular cutting blade. There was a lot of hype surrounding the project. Some even called it the future of shaving. Year? 2015. Raised $4 million. Why once it again, failed?
The cooler got $13 million. Just
as cool as a laser razor sounds, no real technology behind Scarp did what its founders claimed it could do. While Scarp eventually released a prototype, it didn't work as well as it was supposed to. Even physics experts were questioning the product at the time. After the initial hype died down, people started noticing other sketchy details about Scarp. The technology purported to power the razor wasn't well documented, the funding requested seemed very low. Ultimately, Kickstarter shut down the project for violating the site's rules about working prototypes.
Yeah, I like how they were like, even physics experts were questioning whether we had invented lightsabers in 2015. There were some physics experts who were like, I don't think we have lightsabers yet, right? We don't have little tiny lightsabers that can be used as a razor blade.
Yeah, because like, what's the idea? Is that it's skin safe but not hair safe?
Yeah, I guess so. It would only
be if you could invent it, that'd be dope. Yeah.
But like, I think, like you just pointed out, like, what frequency is going to only be absorbed by light-colored hair but not skin? Like, I don't know.
It's the definition of the Onion's YouTube channel where they made fun of TED Talks, where the first one's the guy being like, I'm an idea guy. A car that runs on garbage. Be a good idea. If we can get that going, that'd be a cool idea.
It really does sound like somebody was like, what if a lightsaber was on the tip of a razor instead of a blade? The Amma Brush. Amma Brush was an automatic toothbrush shaped like a mouth guard that claimed to brush your teeth in 10 seconds. All you had to do was insert the device in your mouth, bite down, press a button, and it would brush all your teeth at once in the fraction of the time of a regular brushing. They raised $3,400,000 in 2017.
It looks possible.
Yeah, I guess, like, what axis would it move about to brush your... You know what I'm...
Yeah.
Also, yeah... I don't know why it failed. It failed because its creators were unable to find a European manufacturer who could produce the product at the right price. They tried to work with Asian manufacturers, but the product quality was too low to continue with the project. The owner of the Amma Brush eventually had to file for bankruptcy.
Wait, that seems like an easy solution, right?
I don't know. If the economics don't work out, they just don't work out, right? If you can't produce it for the price.
No, but if Europeans are making it too expensive and Asians are making it too cheap, get Arabs to make it for you.
Oh my god. It's a Goldilocks situation.
Yeah.
This motherfucker didn't read the right books.
Yeah. I think that's obvious, but whatever. It seems like a cool idea. I would buy it.
I feel like anything that claims to, like, increase efficiency in your life and is a plastic product, I'm naturally skeptical of. I'm like, oh, this is going to be another piece of plastic.
You just don't want Izzy to have a vibrator. All right. Number 7, the Xano. I cannot begin to describe to you what this looks like.
I can describe it. I'm just more creative with words than you. It looks like a little drone that fits in the palm of your hand with a mouth and eye that looks surprised. Oh,
yeah. That's pretty good. You basically got it. Okay. Xano was an autonomous, intelligent nano drone able to capture HD photos and videos from the air. It was small enough to fit in the palm of your hands and allegedly able to fly all by itself while connected to your iOS or Android smart device. You could allegedly maneuver the drone by tilting your device forward and backward or from side to side, and the drone sensor would prevent it from colliding with any obstacles. If the drone got too far or ran low on battery, it would automatically return to you. This was in 2015, raised about $3 million, less than the cooler. Why it failed. Xano never actually had a fully functional drone. It turns out that the company's founder had previously tried and failed to develop drones, and Xano was just another entry into their list of failed products. Though Xano did end up shipping a small percentage of drones out to backers, many weren't even able to fly, despite the company's claims that they were fully functional. It would appear that this Kickstarter failure was due to a combination of delusion and lack of execution. The balls it takes to just send them out anyways.
I love the, it's just some monorail guy. It's just some guy who's like always been like, yeah, I can make drones and just can't make drones.
How hard could it be to make a drone? Well, the hard part is selling them. That's all, you gotta put a little face on them.
I mean, it's another version of like, there's definitely, like you said, there's just some ideas guy was like, it takes photos for you and you control it with your phone. So it's like a selfie stick, but on a drone. And then they're just like, have no idea how to do anything. To make a drone.
What if it was Netflix, but for drones taking pictures?
Next up, Adrian, we got the CST-01. It was a Kickstarter campaign launched for an incredibly thin 0.8mm flexible wristwatch with an electric display housed in a single piece of stainless steel wrapped around the wearer's wrist like a flexible bracelet. Remember those like bracelets that you would snap onto your wrist, Adrian? It looks like that, but if it was made of metal and had like an LCD display on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed to be minimalist with no buttons or knobs. Instead, users could set the time from an included base station. It was they raised $1 million in 2013 for this.
Wait, it was just a watch?
Yeah.
It's so ugly. And the font they chose, everything they chose is so ugly.
It honestly seems very possible to make. I feel like I could get in contact with some Chinese manufacturers and get them to build this.
You could do a little bit of ordering from Alibaba?
Yeah, I think I could. I think I could get together the components to make this watch.
For that thing?
I guess maybe nowadays we have flexible displays that might have not been available in 2013.
Oh, this is a really random memory, but do you remember that in middle school at Pleasant Hill?
No.
Where they showed a video about upcoming technology. And one of the craziest things was, it was a big table with a huge monitor on it. And they showed them being able to do like the pinch zoom with your fingers.
it was a Microsoft product. It was the Microsoft.
Do you remember this?
Yes.
I don't remember. I remember just being like, oh, that's crazy. And then everyone having an iPad like 2 years later.
It was the Microsoft Pixel Sense.
Mm.
Oh, it was called the Microsoft Surface at one point, but that got rebranded as their tablet.
Yeah.
What I remember from the demo was the person put down like their cup of water on the table, and then the table recognized their cup of water and put like a little bubble around it. It was like, here's where your water is.
Okay, that's not the stupid thing that I remember. I remember them being able to pinch to zoom and stuff like that. Why were we shown this video? Who showed us this video in the cafeteria?
We watched it
in
the cafeteria. Yeah, yeah. I'm about to point out the same thing. Why were we in the cafeteria for this? Yes, I think this is the video.
Oh, God, this is bringing back memories. Yeah.
Oh, it was their phones they put on, not water.
Mm.
Anyway, basically, they stopped providing updates. This is for the wristwatch thing, the CST-01. They stopped providing updates.
So it worked and was shipped out, or?
No.
Oh,
they stopped providing updates on the manufacturing, on the delivery.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just never sent it out.
All right, we got big number three. We're heading into big league territory. We got Yoke Ventures. What Yoke Ventures was? Yoke Ventures was to be an open world sandbox adventure game along the lines of Minecraft. In fact, the Kickstarter project was launched by two YouTubers who had a popular Minecraft-based show called Shadow of Israfel. The title of the game, Yoke Ventures, was derived from the names of the creator's YouTube channel, which is Yogecast. Despite the backing of 13,647 people, one of which was Paul, on Kickstarter, Yoke Ventures never made it through development. The year, 2012, raised 500,000.
Yeah,
maybe closer
not
to 600 though.
For a whole video game. I can see why they didn't make it happen.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's like a drop in the bucket. Why it failed, neither of Yoke Ventures' creators were developers, so they partnered with a game development company called Vinkerwell, a company that had never actually developed a game before.
Though the game's creators... We know nothing about developing games, so let's partner with other people.
Let's bring on the experts.
developing.
Though the game's creators were genuine in their intention, how do they know that? Neither they nor the developers had the knowledge and experience required to build such an ambitious game from scratch. They managed to release...
That sentence right there, the game's creators were genuine in their intentions. Although their hearts were pure.
They were pure of heart.
Although they were pure of heart. Like, what the fuck do you know?
They managed to release alpha and beta versions. Oh, cool. So a version for Adrian and a version for Paul, the alpha and the beta versions. But burned through all the funding and never made it beyond that.
I mean, I can see why it was inspired by Minecraft. It looks like shit. Was this the alpha version? They're just a screenshot of a guy on a platform in the ocean, and he has a big beard. Yeah, this feels like it would have gotten me as a kid, to be honest. Maybe a little bit earlier than 2012. I think it got me when I was working at Moe's, but before I was like old enough to be super cynical about this stuff, and I'd been fans of this YouTube channel, I 100% would have been one of these people.
That is one of the things, is this feels like a YouTube drama cesspool. I'm surprised there isn't more like, oh, didn't you know that this one YouTuber who has a million quadrillion subscribers that you don't know tried to make a video game?
Tana Mongu released a hat on Kickstarter, but she could never figure out the technology.
Mm-hmm.
It never got released. Yeah, it feels like something you'd hear about. Yeah, I'm surprised there aren't more makeup brands or something, and then they just, like, never develop that eyeliner color that they swore they would be able to create in the lab. Next up, we got the Eye Backpack 2.0.
I mean, the product picture looks very comprehensive.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, okay, hold on. So, this is a backpack. Were you also kind of interested in our youth growing up? I feel like this isn't a thing anymore, that, like, every year there was backpack innovation.
No, that didn't like touch me as much as it touched you growing
that
up.
That didn't, you weren't there from when people started doing rolly backpacks and we were like, whoa.
No, you know what got me?
You gotta put that strain on your back, or, oh, we have the air wicking technology.
No, the version of that got me was every summer I was like, a new type of water gun? How do they keep coming up with features? There's a shield on it now? Now it sprays in a spiral? Who's in the lab working on this? I want that job.
No, I think the backpack one got me. There was so much innovation year to year. And I think it was mostly my neighbors who actually got the newest backpacks. But I was like, damn, that backpack also has a speaker and is a sandwich maker.
This one also, weirdly, it looks like it has a sled at the bottom. Do you understand what this component is? The plastic bottom.
I think just because you set your backpack on a lot of different surfaces, so you don't want that to be absorbent.
Maybe it stands up by itself. It also seems like TSA would shoot you on the spot for having this backpack because there's like 10 different electric components and batteries.
They would
in it.
Bomb you on the spot.
Okay, the iBackpack 2.0. It was the next generation smart backpack. Backpack loaded with features such as 3G, 4G, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth audio, built-in batteries, multiple USB chargers, and much more. The smart backpack also boasted 30 pockets, including secret compartments, and was even going to be available in bulletproof Kevlar.
Well, you'd be foolish not to. Wait, how is it that the further we're going into this list, the less money these things are making?
This was released in 2016 for $80,000. It failed because this was the founder's second failed crowdfunding campaign. In reality, the creator never used any of the money from backers to produce a backpack. Instead, he was spending it on personal expenses and Bitcoin. Oh my god, in 2016. Probably made out like a goddamn villain. In 2019, Monahan was sued by the FTC for running a deceptive... I think it's a different one. It's Doug. A deceptive crowdfunding scheme. This resulted in him being banned from ever using crowdfunding platforms again. Unfortunately, the FTC wasn't able to retrieve any of the money and return it to backers.
All right, you want to talk about another watch that people got fooled by?
We can skip this one. Let's check out this other list.
We're doing another list now. No. We're done.
Let's do three off this list. My half went to like an hour 20, so we're not that far. I guess an hour 10. Okay.
All right, what do you really want to do from this one?
I don't know. I haven't read through it yet. Oh, okay. This one's kind of funny.
All right.
Obviously sci-fi tech. The Triton was a sci-fi underwater breathing device canceled in 2016 on Indiegogo that raised $800,000. It claimed to use artificial gill technology to allow the wearer to breathe underwater. Turned out the guy was developing it with just oxygen canisters and lying to people. Eventually the company came under fire and came clean, and the initial pledges were refunded, though the company promised to relaunch and rebrand its campaign 2 years ago. Triton is still MIA on Indiegogo.
It's a cool idea.
Oh, Star Citizen.
Oh, okay, yeah, tell us about this one, Paul. String me a tale.
Wait, no, you do this.
Wait, one. 179 million?
Dude, a lot of people have fallen for this for a lot of years.
This is a little thing called Star Citizen. Amount raised, more than 179 million. Star Citizen Saga began simply enough. It was to be an epic space adventure video game with a persistent online universe featuring first-person dogfights and an intricate trading ecosystem. The idea was neat enough to raise more than $2.1 million on a $500,000 Kickstarter funding goal in 2012, with an estimated delivery date of November 2014 for the final product. Instead of delivering a game, however, developer Chris Roberts continued crowdfunding efforts on the official Star Citizen website. Some fans donated $5, some more than $15,000. Paul donated $60,000. By 2014, Roberts was up to $35.5 million. 2 years later, that figure had fattened to $104.4 million. As of February 2018, Star Citizen has raised more than $179 million and counting from nearly 2 million donors. Currently in the Alpha 3.0 stage, Chris Roberts' game has missed every single release date it has set for itself since 2012. In a way, Star Citizen is simultaneously one of the biggest crowdfunding successes and failures of all time.
Yeah, and I think what this blurb didn't capture was that it's also kind of like a culty thing, because it's like people will defend it incredibly hard right up until they become like, oh no, I was scammed. And then they become like massive detractors who are like on the subreddits, like
it's
talking
a,
about, yeah, yeah.
Westboro Baptist Church is
weird. Yeah, it's a real like, I'm in it until I get out, and then I'm the biggest like hater.
All right, big facts, no cap.
If you guys do a money order, $50, to the Big Facts No Cap P.O. box, you may or may not receive merch in the future from us.
No cap. Join the Patreon for early access to every episode, which for most episodes means Thursday night instead of Friday morning.
Should we do that thing if we ever release merch where we promise it's like, it's actually going to be an all cotton shirt? It's going to be handmade
union
by
made.
Union, $5, and then we slowly have to renege on every single thing we said. Eventually, we're just selling white t-shirts from one of those like 20 packs where we took a Sharpie and wrote Big Facts No Cap on it.
Honestly, I bet people would buy that. Little one. Everyone gets their own specific merch.
All right. Bye, Adrian.